Mr. James. Good morning, friends. It's Friday with Jim here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm ably assisted today by Terry Wilson, engineer par excellence. The Friday show is produced by Kathleen Morgain. And the original concept for this show actually came from our old station manager, Lisa Smith, who many years ago conned me into doing this interview show, and I've been doing it off and on ever since. But I'm extremely happy to have in the studio with us today Cindy Price, who's apparently now running unopposed for Astoria City Council, although you had an opponent there once or twice, but they've dropped out. Is that correct, Cindy?
I did. Good morning, Jim and Terry and all of our fabulous Coast Community Radio listeners. I did. When I entered the race, there were two other people, the incumbent and another person, but they since withdrew. So it's just me.
I thought Marco would have been great.
Marco's fabulous. I love him. I honestly never could see him being entertained by city council meetings, but and I think maybe he's felt that way too eventually.
Well, Cindy, as some of you probably know, is an old hand here at Coast Community Radio, been around forever, almost as long as me, I think.
But since anyway, 1996. You've probably been here a little longer.
Yeah, I was here at the conception. Well, not the conception.
Yeah.
The first when we opened up. But anyway, for those of you who don't know much about Cindy, I'd like to have you kind of give us a little biographical sketch.
Sure. Well, I did move here to Astoria in 1996. I first visited in 1995 after I met this fabulous man at a dinner party in Beverly Hills, California, where a friend of mine had a big party after the O.J. Simpson verdict. And so a whole bunch of us who had been talking online on AOL for about a year had a party afterwards, and I met a guy I only knew by Coast DA, and it turned out to be Josh Marquis, who we just sort of hit it off right away. And about a year later, we were married, and I was really very delighted when he invited me up to Astoria, and I saw what a great place he lived in. Before that, I mean, I was born in North Carolina. I'm sort of a builder's brat. My father was a home builder. We moved around a lot. I lived in Charlotte until I was 9, and then the family moved to Atlanta, and I lived there through high school and 1 year of college, and then my parents gave me $300 for a vacation, and my girlfriend and I were supposed to go to Florida, but we instead went to California, and driving. And when I got out west, I just felt like the world had opened up, and I could not go back. And then my car broke down, so all was settled, and I've been a West Coast gal ever since. I started out in publishing. My very first job was typing card catalog cards at the Georgia State University, and then went into research for the cards, and then I sort of stayed in words and research from then on.
Well, Georgia State's where you went to school?
Yeah, I went there for 1 year,
mm-hmm.
And so I've been in publishing. I spent many years in publishing as an editor and a production manager. Back in the days when you had color separations and things like that. I don't know if they still do that anymore. I'm not sure how things are printed. And then went into research and worked for a small think tank in Marina Del Rey in Washington, D.C., and did defense policy work and ran a small, very elite strategic studies institute that had conferences in the United States and Europe and did all of that grand stuff and then came to Astoria, and most of that sort of fell away because, as you probably know, Jim, because I know you carry around the New York Review of Books and things like that sometimes, that, you know, if you're not in the loop of these big things regularly, then you just sort of fall out. So I sort of went back to my first love, really, words, and have been an author's editor for the past 13 years in writing and editing.
So you took up with Mr. Marquis and ended up in Astoria.
Yeah.
What's your take on Astoria coming from Southern California?
Well, as I said at the forum a few days ago, I had always in my head, I always imagined that I would wind up in a big old house, not a big house, but an old house surrounded by water. And I always thought it would be maybe on the coast of North Carolina or South Carolina that I'd wind up back there, because I would never be able to afford to live on the coast of Southern California. So when I came here, I just was just gobsmacked. I couldn't believe how beautiful it was. I was just thrilled. And so it's lovely. I just love it. It took quite a while to get used to having very little anonymity here. You know, in Southern California, I went to the same grocery store pretty much every day. I just get my stuff on the run every day. And I went to the same store every day for 7 years and never got to know the clerks, never ran into anybody I knew in the store. Now, you can't go twice here without running into people, you know. And when I first moved here, I would be working on the house or something, or in the garden and looking really cruddy and think I could just run out to City Lumber or someplace and grab something and nobody would notice how cruddy I looked. But, you know, there would be the mayor or the sheriff or somebody. So there's that aspect, which now I quite like. And when I leave Astoria and I go places, I look around and go, I don't know anybody here. It's weird.
No, you're right. That's one of the things that I enjoy about small town, is that pretty soon you kind of almost know everybody.
You do. Well, I don't know. I think that sometimes until, and I know you've done this too since you've been an elected official, you look at the voter list, or at least I look at the voter list and I go, wow, there are a lot of people to get to know. You know, there's so many people that I just don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm working to get to know them by walking the district and saying hello. And
sure. Yeah, but now that you're running unopposed, you don't have to do any of that stuff.
Well, you don't have to, I suppose, but, you know, it's a good idea. I think I really want to get to know. I want the constituents to get to know me and to know that I'm accessible, and here's my phone number, here's my email, and try to get more people involved in the work of the city.
Well, it's a good work of the city. Let's talk about that a little bit. What sort of issues do you focus on regarding city management?
Well, the first job I have is understanding the budget, where the money comes from and where it goes. And I have a big stack on my desk, and I look through them, and I've been trying not to bug city staff too much right now. I know that, after the election, there'll be opportunities will be presented to us, hopefully, you know, maybe more than one at a time, so it doesn't take up so much of their time. The big issues are the big issues. We have land issues, we have river visioning issues, we've got the library, it's all of that stuff. And walking the district and talking to people, the accountability and being more open to more people is very important to people. Now, whether this is just perception or not, I think clearly there are a few things that can be done. The way that I kind of look at the work of the city is like any other pretty good relationship. You know, if you've got a good relationship, 80 to 90% of that relationship is really good 80 to 90% of the time. But sometimes it can just be that little 10% that is the deal breaker in a relationship. And for a number of people in the city, that 10% really basically has to do with clarity, accountability, responsibility, proper use of funds. And there are plenty of people who think that that hasn't quite always been the case. So that's part of my, although I'm unopposed, walking the district, making sure that people know that I'm available, come and talk to me for anything, having monthly meetings, constituent meetings, even if just two or three people come. Those are two or three people who might not go to a city council meeting, might not be comfortable there, but that can talk to me, and perhaps I can pass it around. So that's a big issue, and I hope to help with that.
You know, one thing that's kind of stirred up a bit of controversy here lately in Astoria is the Riverfront Visioning Plan,
sure,
which some people take exception to. Can you kind of outline those arguments for us?
Sure. Well, the plan, the visioning committee started about 7 or 8 years ago, and there were many, many community meetings. It was very open process. Lots of people were involved. We all put dots on boards. What did we like? What did we not like? It was a really, really interesting and good process. And then there was disappointment at the end when it was discovered that after this sort of year or year and a half long process, there would be no actual changes made to zoning or anything. None of this would be implemented. So it was put on the shelf for a while, about 7 years, until another grant came along to rehire a consultant and help with implementing zoning changes. So the original plan itself, a lot of people felt was a compromise from what they had said at these meetings, because the gateway or the greenway area, which is from 16th to 41st along the river, seemed to allow for more building than anyone wanted. Basically, everyone wanted that area to be left alone, because at the time, there were something like 17 permits out for condos in other parts of the river. I mean, there are plenty of other places to build. So then, again, fast forward to just the past year, when this plan started going through the Planning Commission to implement the zoning codes, and more compromises were made. And then the great surprise at the very end, when having gone through the Planning Commission worked really hard, and there was a lot of community involvement there, and they really wound up with a plan that I felt that I could support. It did allow for a little bit of development, but not much. It allowed for docks and marinas, nothing above bank height, out to 500 feet in the river. And then from 500 feet, 501 and beyond, then up to 28 feet, along with some restrictions on width, so you wouldn't have some giant, big, long wall, even if it's 500 feet out in the river. And then it went to the city council, and the city council allowed the port, which, as we all know, is in a bit of dysfunction, to insert their criteria for their own master plan to be presented, and to allow for all sorts of variances at the East Mooring Basin. And that just makes no sense at all. So that's the problem with that. But that is one area of the riverfront. Next area they're going to take up is the sort of the Uniontown area from the roundabout up to, I'm not sure how far towards downtown it goes, but that'll be interesting too, and that will allow for more development. So I don't know what's going to happen with this plan now that the port has its master plan in. I think it's going to be if it stays that way, it's really, the city has put a terrible burden on the Planning Commission, which is a group of very hardworking volunteers, because if the port were to come, were to get their act together and to come with a project, and the Planning Commission did not want that project there, it would be now very difficult to say no because of the criteria that they've put in there. And I think that's just really unfair to the commission and to the city to place that burden.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to remind our listeners that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and we're visiting with Cindy Price, who is running for Astoria City Council, and turns out she's running unopposed. Now, Cindy, I'd like you to flesh out for me, if you would, the port's position regarding that riverfront development.
Well, basically, as far as I can tell, their position is they want to be able to do whatever the heck they want to do whenever they want to do it. Period, the end. And they have sent a lawyer up. They've joined forces with Floyd Holcomb, whose cannery pier development I think we all really enjoy. But they have basically made it very clear that any restriction put on development on their property will be considered ill. You know, they'll sue the city. So there's really no way of compromise with them at this point. It's kind of ridiculous, I think.
Well, that's one way to put it. You know, I don't know if it's a hot-button issue for you or not, but one of the issues that City Council is dealing with is the DWI is at Municipal Court. Now,
you must have been from California, too, since you say DWI. Because that's what they are down there. Here they're DUIIs, as you know.
Driving while?
Driving under the influence of intoxicants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, for years, those have been handled. Citations that are issued within the city limits have been dealt with at municipal court. And the district attorney went to the city council and offered to take those cases over to circuit court, and the city council declined.
Yeah, and there's been a holy war ever since.
Yeah, and it almost reached the point of personal conflict there. And maybe I know you're a little bit close to that issue, but maybe you could describe for me how that conflict came about and how it's going to be resolved.
Okay, well, I am pretty close to this because, as you said, I'm married to the district attorney, and I've been here since 1996. And over that time, over the years, there have been some really just heart-wrenching moments where victims of drunk drivers or family members of people who were not cited for drunk driving, and then whose family member suffered some ill fate, have been in front of me and Josh, crying, begging the district attorney to do something because the city did not act responsibly. It's been the case, you know, perhaps it was if the city, my family member has been stopped a number of times for drunk driving by the city of Astoria. And those, I don't know, and they got a ticket, but somehow the ticket disappeared. So they were never, and they felt very strongly that if their family member had to have some consequence of that, had spent a night in jail or something, that perhaps they would have gotten treatment and perhaps they wouldn't now be dead or terribly incapacitated by their alcoholism. Things like that. And then so there have been, so that's what made Josh act, that because there were always some cases that were sent to circuit court. Not everything. Not all DUIIs went to municipal court. Some of the bigger ones have to go to state court, and they were sent there. So Josh began to ask the city, look, why don't I take these over? Then there was the case of the report, the city council. There was a bit of an ambush there. It was like going into the OK Corral when he gave that presentation. And there were a few mistakes in the report. The mistakes, the most egregious mistake that the city got really unhappy about was that the district attorney had, in the report, said that a local criminal defense attorney had altered a court document. And that was not true. It was not the criminal defense attorney. It was the municipal court judge who altered the document. So, look, everybody makes mistakes. I don't think we need to rehash all of that. I think that that it perhaps to some people it is debatable whether it is better to send the serious issues of drunk driving or driving under the influence of intoxicants to a court where you have part-timers. Sometimes they're a criminal defense attorney there, they're a judge there, and then that afternoon they're a criminal defense attorney somewhere else, all that kind of system, or just send it to state court where you know who everybody is, you know the players are, they're accountable, they are elected, they can be recalled, they can be unelected. Everything they do, every post-it note is saved in a file forever. They have the ability to, if something comes in and somebody wants, somebody wants a diversion, you know, there are rules about diversions. You can't have one if you can't get a diversion, which sort of is basically a sort of ollie ollie oxen free, just to keep it simple. You can't have one if you've had one within the past 10 years. Well, our municipal court doesn't have the ability to run that to find out whether somebody's on a diversion in another state. State court, the district attorney's office does, and they always run that. In municipal court, whenever a citation comes in, it is the role of the prosecutor. In fact, it's basically the role of the prosecutor to review charges of police before and make a determination whether those charges should go forward to court. That is the role of the prosecutor. In the municipal court, that is not done. It's basically a direct line to either just being dismissed or to court. So, you know, I just think that best practices, take it to state court. In early August, I initiated correspondence with our city prosecutor, city attorney, they're both the same, Blair Henningsgaard, and our presiding court judge, Phil Nelson, and the state court administrator. Just getting the data. What's the data? Is there any money? Is this like something that's going to lose Astoria a lot of money that it needs in its budget? And no, it's at best a wash. It probably costs Astoria a little more. Is it going to be a burden to the courts? Well, Judge Nelson's thing is it's not the court's decision to say whether something's a burden. We do our job. You send us stuff, we'll do it. Last year in 2013, Astoria Police Department gave out 41 DUIIs total. 17 of them, I believe, just were diversions. So basically you're talking about maybe an additional 10 cases going to state court, and who knows how many of those would actually wind up in the courts after review by a prosecutor. It's not worth haggling over anymore. Let's just send it to state court, keep it accountable, keep it transparent.
Well, you know, an argument that I've heard regarding that issue is that for example, if I go out and I get a drunk driving ticket, then I want to be judged by a jury of my peers. And my peers are in Astoria. And if you send me over to circuit court, all of a sudden my peer group has expanded to include the whole county.
Oh, my goodness. Do you really think that your peer group is that different in Seaside than it is in Astoria?
Yes.
I wish we had that much diversity, but we don't. I think that's a specious argument.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah. You know, really, the chances of you going to court on it are pretty low anyway, unless, that's just not a good argument.
You know, one of the things that the city does is provide infrastructure.
Yeah.
For example, sewer and water and streets and all of that. How are you going to get up to speed on all of those issues? There's some really complicated issues infrastructure-wise.
Yeah, there are. Well, I've been doing my homework, and, I think I can figure it out. First of all, the CSO project, one of the biggest ones, was at my corner all summer last year, so I'm really familiar with how that works. We just have to carry on. You know, there has been some discussion amongst the mayoral candidates about the health of the city's budget, and I don't think it's in ill health, but I am a little concerned about the amount of debt that the city is carrying, and that the citizens are having to pay for, taxpayers. There's about $20 million of debt for the CSO project, and we may be on the hook for another $20 million more, because it's only about anywhere from a half to two thirds done. And they'll be digging again next week on, I think, 14th, 15th, 16th, you know, in that area. So already our sewer surcharge is what it went up to, I think, 87% of the water bill now you pay in just the sewer surcharge. And it's going to keep going up. And still, I don't know. We just have to keep paying for these things. There may have to be a bond. You can't keep taxes at their current rate forever.
Well, I argued vehemently against signing that stipulation agreement with the DEQ that resulted in the stormwater separation project. It's money spent foolishly. So that a few times a year, you're eliminating the discharge of a little bit of sanitary sewage for an incredible price. It just seems to me unwieldy to have to pay that, but we're already locked into it.
It's a heavy burden, you're right, and I have asked if there's not, you know, can't you go to DEQ and say, look, we have, with the work that has been done, we have solved 80% or more, I think, of the problem. And, you know, on these small cities, what a tremendous burden the feds have put on us.
Well, in the early 70s, Cindy, the feds came down with the requirement that we build the stormwater separation system with the diversion manholes all around the peninsula that is Astoria. It cost an incredible amount of money that we had to do. And then 20, 30 years later, they changed the rules, and all of a sudden, those diversion manholes weren't good enough.
Right.
Because when it rains a lot, the diversion manhole does what it's supposed to do. The water gets diverted, runs out into the river. And so I can't help but wonder what other kind of surprises DEQ might be sending our way.
Well, here's one that I'm concerned about, and I don't know if it comes from DEQ. Maybe you can tell me. But I did learn recently that there are EPA rules governing water systems. And if you are a water system above 10,000 people, a whole new set of EPA rules kick in. And the city of Astoria, its current population is 9,557 or something. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it's declining. It seems like people are enjoying it here and moving here. But that's a very small margin. I don't know what happens after that.
Yeah, well, the EP regulations are kicked down to the state, and they're enforced here by the DEQ.
Yeah.
So that's how that comes about. Another thing that I've often wondered about is that our water supply is totally dependent on one single pipeline that runs down through the woods. And different ways to approach that. Have you given that much thought?
I took a tour of the watershed 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting. I had never been up to the dam. The dam is very old.
Very impressive.
It will, we're a vulnerable little community in all different kinds of ways in infrastructure. But this is no different than any other city in America. And we just have to address it step by step as best we can.
But one of the things that people do in some communities is join together and form like a water district,
right?
A regional fire district.
Yeah.
Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, for example, is there any talk down at City Hall about kind of kicking things along in that direction?
Well, you know, I haven't been in City Hall yet.
Oh.
I'll let you ask me in February, maybe. But I have had a couple of constituents say to me, you know, why doesn't the city of Astoria think about getting its water from Napa and some other sources? So, you know, obviously there
are things to look
at. Well,
Napa gets their water from us.
Well, what's beyond where Brownsmead gets its water from Napa? I mean, not mm-hmm. from that dam, so some other ways.
Yeah.
Not something I know yet, but I'll check into it.
Well, we could continue this conversation.
We could.
I'm having a wonderful time, but time is something that we're running out of. And I'd like to thank Cindy Price for visiting with us here. She'll be Presumably we'll get elected, unless there's so many write-ins that you get.
Don't
probably
say
not.
Yeah, I know it is an uncontested race, and people often just skip over them, but I do ask that you take the time to fill in the oval and let me go into office with a mandate and work to keep it.
Well,
thank you, Jim.
Well, thank you, and thank you for running. You know, democracy requires candidates, and I appreciate you doing that. Next week, we'll be visiting with Zeddy Niemenwall. Is that how you say it?
Nimlewill.
Nimlewill. And she's a candidate for city council, and we'll be visiting with her next week. Until then, thanks for listening, and stick around for Albert Smith's always wonderful Friday Folk. Goodbye.